angels blowing golden trumpets adorning the walls. The stations, single stations with a rotating backup scheme, were manned by belters looking at each other and chatting. The security station was through a separate door and stood unmanned. The bridge crew were acting like children or civilians. Their expressions were bright and excited. People who didn't recognize danger when they saw it and assumed that whatever the crisis was, it would all work out in the end. Ashford and Paw were at the command station. Ashford was speaking into a camera, talking with someone on one of the other ships. Paw scowled, strode toward Bull. Her eyes were narrow and her lips bloodless.
"What the hell are you doing here, Mr. Baca?"
"I've got to talk to the captain," Bull said.
"Captain Ashford's busy right now," Pa said. "You might have noticed we have a situation on our hands. I would have expected you to be at your duty station."
"Yes, Exo, but
your station isn't on the bridge. You should leave now." Bull clenched his jaw. He wanted to shout at her, but this wasn't the time for it. He was here to make it work, and that wasn't going to help.
"We've got to shoot him, ma'am," Bull said. "We've got to fire on the Rosinante, and we've got to do it now."
All heads had turned toward them. Ashford ended his transmission and stepped toward them. Uncertainty made him look haughty. The captain's eyes flickered toward the crew members at their stations and back again. Bull could see how aware Ashford was that he was being watched. It deformed all his decisions. But there wasn't time for privacy.
"I have this under control, Mr. Baca," Ashford said.
"All respect, Captain," Bull said. "But we've got to shoot down Holden, and we have to do it before anyone else does."
"We're not going to do a damn thing until we know what's going on, mister," Ashford said, his voice taking a dangerous buzz.
"I've sent back a request for clarification to Ceres to see whether the higher-ups authorized Holden's action, and I am monitoring the activity of the Earther fleet." The slip was telling. Not UN. Earther. Bull felt the blood in his neck. Ashford's casual racism and incompetence was about to get them all killed. He gritted his teeth, lowered his head, and raised his voice.
"Sir, there's a calculation happening right now with Earth and Mars both. This is a potentially volatile situation, Mr. Baca, where they have to decide whether to take direct response or let Holden win. And I'm not going to be the one to throw gas on the fire. Escalating to violence at this point, and once they start shooting at him, they're going to start shooting at us."
Pa's voice cut through the air like a single flute in a bass symphony. "He's right, sir." Bull and Ashford turned toward her. Ashford's surprise was a mirror of his own. The man at the sensor station muttered something to the woman next to him, the hiss of his voice carrying in the sudden silence.
"Mr. Bucker's right," Pa said. "Holden's identified himself as a representative of the OPA. He's taken violent action against the Earth forces. The opposing commanders will have to look on us as his backup."
"Holden isn't a representative of the OPA, Ashford said. The bluster made him sound unsure.
"You called Ceres," Bull said. "If you're not sure, they're not either."
Ashford's face flushed red.
"Holden hasn't had any official status with the OPA since Fred Johnson fired him over his handling of Ganymede. If there's a question, I can clarify with the other commanders that Holden doesn't speak for us, but no one's taking any action. The best thing is to wait and let things cool down."
Pa looked down, then up again. It didn't matter that she'd humiliated Bull and Sam in front of the command staff. All that counted was doing this next part right. Bull wanted to reach out, touch her arm, lend her the courage to stand up to Ashford. It turned out she didn't need it.
"Sir, if we don't take the initiative, someone else will. And then it's going to be too late for clarifications. Denials are fine if they're believed, but Holden and his crew were known to be working with us previously, and they're claiming to represent us now. We're 4 hours lag to Ceres. We can't wait for answers."
We have to make the division between us and Holden unequivocal. Mr. Buck is right. We need to engage the Rocinante. Ashford's face was gray. I'm not going to start a shooting war, he said.
You listening to the same feeds as me, Captain? Bull asked.
Everyone already thinks we did.
The Rocinante's one ship. We can take her out, Pa said. If we fight Earth or Mars, we'll lose.
The truth lay on the floor between them. Ashford put a hand to his chin. His eyes were flickering back and forth like he was reading something that wasn't there. Every second he didn't respond, his cowardice showed through, and Bull could see that the man knew it, resented it. Ashford was responsible, and didn't want the responsibility. He was more afraid of looking bad than of losing.
Mr. Chen, Ashford said, get a tight beam to the Rocinante. Tell Captain Holden that it's an urgent matter.
Yes, sir, the communications officer said, and then a moment later, the Rocinante isn't accepting the connection, sir.
Captain, the man at the sensor array said,
the Rocinante's changing course.
Where's she going?
Ashford demanded, his gaze still locked on Bull.
Toward us, sir?
Ashford closed his eyes.
Mr. Corley, he growled. Power up the port missile array. Mr. Chen, I want tight beam connections to the Earth and Mars command ships, and I want them now.
Bull let himself sag back. The sense of urgency giving way to relief and a kind of melancholy.
One more time, Colonel Johnson. We dodged the bullet one more time.
Weapons board is green, sir, the weapons officer said, her voice crisp and excited as a kid in an arcade.
Lock target, Ashford said. Do I have those tight beams yet?
We're acknowledged and pending, sir, Chen said. They know we want to talk.
That'll do, Ashford said, and began pacing the bridge like an old-time captain on a wooden quarterdeck.
His hands were clasped behind his back.
We have lock, the weapons officer said. Then, the Rocinante's weapon systems are powering up.
Ashford sank into his couch. His expression was sour. He'd been hoping, Bull realized, that it might be true, that the OPA might be making a play to control the ring. The man was an idiot.
Should we fire, sir? The weapons officer asked, the strain in her voice like a dog on a leash.
She wanted to, badly.
Bull didn't think better of her for it.
He glanced at Pa, but she was making a point of not looking at him.
Yes, Ashford said. Go ahead. Fire.
One away, sir, the weapons officer said.
I'm getting an error code, the operations officer said. We're getting feedback from the launcher.
Bull's mouth tasted like a penny. If Holden had put a bomb on the behemoth too, their problems might only be starting.
Is the missile out? Pa snapped. Tell me we don't have an armed torpedo stuck in the tube.
Yes, sir, the weapons officer said. The missile is away. We have confirmation.
The Rocinante is taking evasive maneuvers.
Is she returning fire? Ashford said.
No, sir. Not yet, sir.
I'm getting errors in the electrical grid, sir. I think something shorted out. We might...
The bridge went dark.
Lose power, sir.
The monitors were black. The lights were off. The only sound was the hum of the air recyclers, running, Bull imagined, off the battery backups. Ashford's voice came out of the darkness.
Mr. Pa, did we ever test fire the missile systems?
I believe it's on the schedule for next week, sir, the XO said.
Bull tuned his hand terminal screen to its brightest, lifting it like a torch. He glanced up at the emergency lighting set into the walls all around the room, sitting there as dark as everything else. Another system that hadn't been tested yet. A few seconds later, half of the bridge crew pulled flashlights out of recessed emergency lockers. The light level came up as beams played across the room. No one spoke.
No one needed to. If the Rocinante fired back, they were a dead target. But the chances were that they wouldn't lose the whole ship. If they'd waited until they were in pitched battle against Earth or Mars or both, the behemoth would have died. Instead, they'd just shown the whole system how unprepared they were. It was the first time Bull was really glad to be just the security officer.
Exo, Bull said.
Yes?
Permission to release the chief engineer from house arrest?
Pa's face was monochrome gray in the dim light, and solemn as the grave. Still, he thought he saw a glint of bleak amusement in her eyes.
Permission granted, she said.
Chapter 16. Holden.
Well, Amos said, that's just fucking peculiar.
The message began to repeat. This is Captain James Holden. What you've just seen is a demonstration of the danger you are in. The ops deck was in a stunned silence. Then Naomi began working the ship ops panel with a quiet fury. In Holden's peripheral vision, Monica motioned to her crew and Okju lifted a camera. The tacit decision to let the no civilians on the ops deck rule slide suddenly seemed like it might have been a mistake.
It's a fake, Holden said. I never recorded that. That's not me.
Sort of sounds like you, though, Amos said.
Jim, Naomi said, panic beginning to distort her voice. That broadcast is coming from us. It's coming from the Rossi right now.
Holden shook his head, denying the assertion outright. The only thing more ridiculous than the message itself was the idea that it was coming from his ship.
That broadcast is coming from us, Naomi said, slamming her hand against her screen. And I can't stop it. Everything seemed to recede from Holden. The noises in the room coming from far away. He recognized it as a panic reaction. But he gave in to it, accepted the short moment of peace it brought. Monica was shouting questions at him he could barely hear. Naomi was furiously pounding on her workstation, flipping through menu screens faster than he could follow. Over the ship's comm, Alex was shouting demands for orders. From across the room, Amos was staring at him with a look of almost comical puzzlement. The two camera operators, equipment still clutched in one hand, were trying to belt themselves into crash couches with the other. Cohen floated in the middle of the room, lips pursed in a faint frown.
This was the setup, Holden said. This is what it was for.
Everything, the Martian lawsuit, the loss of his Titania job, the camera crew going to the ring, all leading to this. The only thing he couldn't imagine was why.
What do you mean? Monica asked, pushing close to get into the shot with him.
What setup?
Amos put a hand on her shoulder and shook his head once.
Naomi, Holden said, is the only system you've lost control of, comms?
I don't know. I think so.
Then kill it. If you can't, help Amos isolate the entire comm system from the power grid. Cut it out of the damn ship if you have to.
She nodded again and then turned to Amos.
Alex, Holden said.
Monica started to say something to him, but he held up one finger to silence her, and she closed her mouth with a snap.
Get us burning toward the behemoth. We're not really claiming the ring for the OPA, but as long as everyone thinks we are, they're the team least likely to shoot us.
What can you tell me about what's going on? Monica said.
Are we in danger here? Is this dangerous?
Her usual smirk was gone. Open fear had replaced it.
Strap in, Holden said. All of you, do it now.
Okju and Clip were already belted into crash couches, and Monica and Cohen quickly followed suit. The entire documentary crew had the good sense to stay quiet.
Cap, Alex said.
His voice had taken on the almost sleepy tone he got when in a high-stress situation.
The behemoth just lit us up with their targeting laser.
Holden belted himself into the combat op station and warmed it up. The Rossi began counting ships within their threat radius. It turned out to be all of them. The ship asked him if any should be marked as hostiles.
Your guess is as good as mine, honey.
Huh? Naomi asked.
Alex said. Are you guys warming up the weapons?
No, Holden said.
Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that, Alex said. Weapon systems are coming online.
Are we shooting at anyone?
Not yet.
Holden told the Rossi to mark anything that hit them with a targeting system as hostile, and was relieved when the system actually responded. The behemoth shifted to red on the display. Then, after a moment's thought, he told the ship to lump all the Martians and Earth ships into two groups. If they wound up fighting with one ship in a group, they'd be fighting them all. There were too many. The Rossi was caught between Fred Johnson's 2-kilometer-long OPA overcompensation and most of the remaining Martian Navy. And beyond the Martians, the Ring. Okay, he said, desperately trying to think of what to do now. They were as far from a hiding spot as it was possible to be in the solar system. It was a 2-month trip just to the nearest rock bigger than their ship. He doubted he could outrun 3 fleets and all their torpedoes for 2 months, or 2 minutes, really, if it came to that.
How's that radio coming?
Down, Amos said. Easy enough to just pull the plug.
Do we have any way to tell everyone that the broadcast wasn't us? I will happily signal full and complete surrender at this point, Holden said.
Not without turning it back on, Amos replied.
Everyone out there is probably trying to contact us, Holden said.
The longer we don't answer, the worse this will look.
What about the weapons?
Warmed up, not shooting, Amos said, and not responding to us.
Can we pull power on those too?
We can, Amos said, looking pained. But damn, I sure don't want to.
Fast mover, Naomi yelled.
Holy shit, Alex said. The OPA just fired a torpedo at us.
On Holden's panel, a yellow dot separated from the behemoth and shifted to orange as it took off at high G.
Go evasive, Holden said. Naomi, can you blind it?
No, no laser, she replied, her voice surprisingly calm now. And no radio. Countermeasures aren't responding.
Fuck me, Amos said. Why did someone drag us all the way out here just to kill us? Could have done that at Ceres, saved us the trip.
Alex, here's your course. Holden sent the pilot a vector that would take them right through the heart of the Martian fleet. As far as he knew, the Martians only wanted to arrest him. That sounded okay. Has the behemoth fired again?
No, Naomi replied. They've gone dark. No active sensors, no drives.
Kinda big and kinda close to be trying for sneaky, Alex said without any real humor. Here comes the juice.
While the couches pumped them full of drugs to keep the high G from killing them, apropos of nothing, Cohen said,
Fucking bitch.
Before Holden could ask what he meant, Alex opened up the Rossi's throttle, and the ship took off like a racehorse feeling the spurs. The sudden acceleration slammed Holden into his couch hard enough to daze him for a second. The ship buzzed him back to his senses when a missile proximity alarm warned him the behemoth's torpedo was getting closer. Helpless to do anything about it, Holden watched the orange dot that meant all their deaths creeping ever closer to the fleeing Rosinante. He looked up at Naomi, and she was looking back, as helpless as he was. All her best tricks taken away when the comm array was powered down. The gravity dropped suddenly.
Got an idea, Alex said over the comm.
Then the ship jerked through several sharp maneuvers and the gravity went away again. The Rosinante had added a new alarm to her song. A collision warning was sounding. Holden realized he'd never actually heard a collision alarm outside of drills. When do spaceships run into each other? He turned on the exterior cameras to a field of uniform black. For a second, he thought they were broken, but then Alex took control of them, panning out along the vast expanse of a Martian cruiser's skin. The target lock buzzer cut out, the missile losing them.
"Put this Martian heavy between us and the missile,"
Alex said, almost whispering it as though the missile might hear if he spoke too loud.
"How close are we to them?" Holden asked, his voice matching Alex's.
"About 10 meters,
Alex said, pride in his voice.
"More or less." "This is really gonna piss them off if the missile keeps coming,"
Amos said. Then, almost meditatively,
"I don't even know what a point defense cannon does at a range like this."
As if in answer, the cruiser hit them with a targeting laser. Then, all of the other Martian ships did as well, adding a few dozen more alarms to the cacophony.
"Shit,"
Alex said, and the gravity came back like a boulder rolled onto Holden's chest. None of the Martian ships fired, but the original missile shot back into view on the scope. The Martians were guiding it in, now that the behemoth seemed to be out of action. Holden marveled that he'd lived just long enough to finally see real Martian OPA cooperation. It wasn't as gratifying as he'd hoped. Martian ships whipped past on both sides as the Rocinante accelerated through the main cluster of their fleet. Holden could imagine the targeting arrays and point defense cannons swiveling to track them as they went by. Once past them, there was nothing but the ring and infinite star-speckled black all around it. The plan came to mind with the sick, sinking feeling of something horrible he'd always known and tried to forget. The missile was coming, and even if they avoided it, there would be others. He couldn't dodge forever. He couldn't surrender. For all he knew, his weapons might start firing at any second. For a moment, the ops deck seemed to go still, time slowing the way it did when something catastrophic was happening. He was intensely aware of Naomi, pressed back in her couch. Monica and Okju, their eyes wide with fear and thrust. Clip, his hand pressed awkwardly into the gel by his side. Cohen's slack jaw and pale face.
"Huh," Holden gurgled to himself, the G-forces crushing his throat when he vocalized.
He signaled Alex to cut thrust, and the gravity dropped away again.
"The ring," Holden said. "Aim for the ring. Go."
The gravity came back with a slap, and Holden rotated his chair to his workstation and brought up the navigational console. Watching the rapidly approaching orange dot out of the corner of his eye, he built a navigational package for Alex that would take them at high speed to the ring, then spin them for a massive and almost suicidally dangerous deceleration burn just before they went in. He could slide them in under the velocity cap that had stopped the EK and all the fast-moving probes since. With any luck, the missile would be caught by whatever was on the other side, and the Rossi, going slower, wouldn't. The ship warned him that such high G forces had a 3% chance to kill one of the crew members, even during a short burn. The missile would kill them all. Holden sent the nav package to Alex, half expecting him to refuse. Hoping. Instead, the Rossi accelerated for an endless 27 minutes, followed by a nauseating zero-G spin that lasted less than 4 seconds, and a deceleration burn that lasted 4.5 minutes and knocked every single person on the ship unconscious.
"Wake up," Miller said in the darkness.
The ship was in freefall. Holden began coughing furiously as his lungs attempted to find their normal shape again after the punishing deceleration burn. Miller floated beside him. No one else seemed to be awake yet. Naomi wasn't moving at all. Holden watched her until he could see the gentle rise and fall of her ribcage. She was alive.
doors and corners, Miller said.
His voice was soft and rough.
I tell you to check your doors and corners, and you blow into the middle of the room with your dick hanging out. Lucky son of a bitch.
Give you this, though. You're consistent. Something about the way he spoke seemed saner than usual, more controlled. As if guessing his thoughts, the detective turned to look at him, smiled.
Are you here? Holden asked.
His mind was still fuzzy, his brain abused by thrust and oxygen loss.
Are you real? You're not thinking straight. Take your time. Catch up. There's no hurry.
Holden pulled up the exterior cameras and blew out one long exhale that almost ended in a sob. The OPA missile was floating outside the ship, just over 100 meters from the nose of the Rosie. The torpedo's drive was still firing, its tail a furious white torch stretching nearly a kilometer behind it. But the missile hung in space, motionless. Holden didn't know if the missile had been that close when they went through. He suspected not. More likely, they'd just wound up that close once they'd both stopped moving. Even so, the sight of the massive weapon, engine burning as if it still fought to reach him, made a shiver go down his spine and his balls creep up into his belly. 10 meters closer, and they'd have been in proximity. It would have detonated. As he watched, the missile was slowly pulled away, dragged off to who knew where by whatever power set the speed limit on this side of the ring.
We made it, he said. We're through.
Yeah, Miller said. This is what you wanted, isn't it? This is why you did it. You're giving me too much credit.
Amos and Naomi both groaned as they started to wake. The documentary crew was motionless. They might even be dead. Holden couldn't tell without unstrapping, and his body wouldn't allow that yet. Miller leaned close to the screen, squinting at it like he was searching for something. Holden pulled up the sensor data. A host of information flooded in. Numerous objects clustered within 1 million kilometers, close as seeds in a pod. And past them, nothing. Not even starlight.
What are they? Holden asked. What's out there?
Miller glanced down at the display. His face was expressionless.
Nothing, the dead man said. And then, it scares the shit out of me.
Chapter 17. Bull.
The hell are we?
Serge said, floating gently by the security desk.
Security? Or fucking babysitters?
We're whatever gets the job done,
Bull said, but he couldn't put much force behind the words. It was 30 hours since the behemoth had gone dark, and he had slept for 6 of them. Serge, Casimir, Jojo, and Corin had been trading off duty at the desk, coordinating the recovery. The rest of the security staff had been in ad hoc teams, putting down 2 little panic riots, coordinating the physical resources to free 12 people trapped in storage bays where the air recycler hadn't booted back up, arresting 2 mech jockeys who'd taken the chaos as opportunity to settle a personal score. The lights were on all across the ship now. The damage control systems, woken from their coma, were working double time to catch up. The crews were exhausted, and frightened, and on edge. And James fucking Holden had escaped through the ring into whatever was on the other side. The security office smelled like old sweat and the bean curd masala that Casimir had brought in yesterday. For the first day, there had been an unconscious effort to keep a consistent physical orientation. Feet toward the floor, head toward the ceiling. Now they all floated in whatever direction they happened to fall into. It seemed almost natural to the belters. Bull still suffered the occasional bout of vertigo.
Amen, Alice, amen, Serge said with a laugh. Lube for the machine, us.
Least fun I've ever had with lube, Corin said. Bull noted that when Corin got tired, she got raunchy. In his experience, everyone dealt with pushing too hard differently. Some got angry and irritable. Some got sad. At a guess, it was all loss of inhibition. Wear down the facade with too much work or fear or both, and whoever was waiting underneath came out.
All right, Bull said. You two go take a rest. I'll watch the shop until the others get back. You two have done more than...
The security desk chimed. The connection request was from Sam. Bull lifted a finger to Serge and Corin and pulled himself over to the desk.
Sam, he said.
Bull, she replied. And the single syllable, short and sharp, carried a weight of annoyance and anger that verged on rage. I need you to come down here.
You can call whoever you want, a man's voice said in the background. I don't care, you hear? I don't care anymore. You do whatever you want.
Bull checked the connection location. She was down near the machine shops. It wasn't too far.
I need to bring a sidearm? Bull asked.
I won't stop you, sweetie, Sam said.
On my way, he said, and dropped the connection.
Gehst du, Corin said to Serge. You've been up longer. I'll keep the place from burning.
You going to be all right?
Serge asked, and it took Bull a second to realize the man was talking to him.
Unstoppable, Bull said, trying to mean it.
Being exhausted in zero gravity wasn't the same as it was under thrust or down a gravity well. Growing up, Bull had been dead tired pretty often, and the sense of weight of his muscles falling off the bone like overcooked chicken was what desperate fatigue meant. He'd been off of Earth for more years now than he'd been on it, and it still confused him on an almost cellular level to be worn to the point of collapse and not feel it in his joints. Intellectually, he knew it left him feeling that he could do more than he actually could. There were other signs. The grit against his eyes, the headache that bloomed slowly out from the center of his skull, the mild nausea. None of them had the same power, and none of them convinced. The corridors weren't empty, but they weren't crowded. Even at full alert, with every team working double shifts and busting ass, the behemoth was mostly empty. He moved through the ship, launching himself handhold to handhold, sailing down each long straightaway like he was in a dream. He was tempted to speed up, slapping at the handholds and ladders as they passed and adding just a touch of kinetic energy to his float, the way he and his men had back in his days as a Marine. More than one concussion had come out of the game, and he didn't have time for it now. He wasn't young anymore, either. He found Sam and her crew in a massive service bay. Four men in welding rigs floated near the wall, fixing lengths of conduit to the bulkhead with showers of sparks and lights brighter than staring at the sun. Sam floated nearby, her body at a 45-degree angle from the work. A young belter floated near her, his body at an angle that pointed his feet toward her. Bull understood it was an insult. Bull, Sam said. The young man's face was a pale mask of rage. This is Gareth. He's decided laying conduit's icky. I'm an engineer, Gareth said, spitting out the word so violently it gave him a degree of spin. Did 8 years on Tycho Station. I'm not going to get used like a fucking technician. The other welders didn't turn from their work, but Bull could see them all listening. He looked at Sam, and her face was closed. Bull couldn't tell if calling him in for help had been hard for her, or if it was part of how she expected him to make things right to her after the thing with Pa. That it had been the shortest detention on record didn't pull the sting of being caught up in his political struggles. Either way, she'd escalated the problem to him, and so it was his now. Bull took a deep breath.
So, what are we working on here? He asked, less because he cared than that it would give him a few extra seconds to think, and his brain wasn't at its best. I've got a major line faulting out, Sam said. I can take 3 days and diagnose the whole thing, or I can take 20 hours and put up a workaround.
And the conduits for the workaround?
Is. Bull lifted his fist in the belter's equivalent of a nod and then turned his attention to the boy. Gareth was young, and he was tired, and he was an OPA belter, which meant he'd never been through any kind of real military indoctrination. Bull had to figure Sam had yelled at him enough before she'd called for backup.
All right, then, Bull said.
Estaje bullshit is, the man said, his educated grammar fracturing.
I understand, Bull said. You can go. Just help me get your rig on first.
Gareth blinked. Bull thought he saw the ghost of a smile in the corners of Sam's bloodshot eyes, but that could have meant anything. Pleasure at the weariness in Bull's voice, or at Gareth's confusion. Or maybe she'd understood what Bull was doing, and she thought he was really clever.
I talked to the guys on the other ship some, Bull said. Earth or Mars. Someone will be sending a ship back. I'll see if I can't get you a ride as far as Ceres, anyway.
Gareth's mouth opened and closed like a goldfish. Sam pushed off, hooking the welder's rig with one hand, pulling it close to speed up the turn, and then extending her arm to slow it. Bull took it from her and started pulling on the straps.
You know how to do this? Sam asked. Good enough to hang conduit, Bull said.
Security can lose you?
Shift's done, Bull said. I was just heading for my bunk. But this needs doing. I can do it.
All right, then, Sam said. Take the length at the end, and I'll have someone join it up with Marcus. I'll come check your work in a minute.
Sounds good, Bull said.
He was spinning just a few degrees each second, and he let the momentum carry him around to face the boy. The rage was still there, but it was sinking under a layer of embarrassment. All his arguments and bluster about not doing something because it was beneath him, and now the head of security was using his off-shift to do the same work. Bull could feel the attention of the other welders on them. Bull lit his torch, just testing it out, and the air between them went white for a second.
Okay, then. I got this. You can go if you want.
The boy shifted, getting ready to launch himself back across the bay and out into the ship. Bull tried to remember the last time he'd actually welded something with no gravity. He was pretty sure he could do it, but he'd have to start slow. Then Gareth's shoulders cupped forward, and he knew he wouldn't have to. Bull started taking off the straps, and Gareth moved forward to help him.
You're tired, Bull said, his voice low enough not to carry to the others. You've been working too hard, and it got to you a little. Happens to everyone.
Bien. He put the torch in the boy's hand and squeezed it there.
This is a privilege, Bull said. Being out here, doing this bullshit, working our asses off for no one to give a shit. It's a privilege. Next time you undermine Chief Engineer Rosenberg's authority, I will ship your ass home with a note that says you couldn't handle it.
The boy muttered something Bull couldn't make out. The flare from the other torches made the boy's face dance white and brown and white again. Bull put a hand on his arm.
Yes, sir, Gareth said.
Bull let go, and the boy pushed off to the wall, situating himself over the length of pipe that was waiting there for him. Sam appeared at Bull's elbow, sliding down from the blind spot above and behind him.
That worked, she said.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt that you're an Earther.
Didn't. How's it all coming?
Apart, Sam said. But we'll stick it back together with bubblegum if we have to.
At least no one was shooting at us.
Sam's laugh had some warmth in it.
They wouldn't have had to do it twice.
The alert tone came from all their hand terminals at once, simultaneous with the ship address system. Bull felt his lips press thin.
"Well, that timing's a little ominous," Sam said before Captain Ashford's voice rang out through the ship.
The openness of the spaces and the different speakers made the words echo like the voice of God.
"This is your captain speaking. I have just received confirmation from the OPA Central Authority that the actions undertaken by the criminal James Holden were unauthorized by any part of the Outer Planets Alliance. His actions put not only this ship, but the reputation and good standing of the Alliance in threat. I have informed the Central Authority that we took swift and decisive action against Holden, and that he escaped from us only by retreating through the ring."
"Thanks for that, by the way," Sam said. "De nada."
"I have requested and received," Ashford continued, "the authority to continue action to address this insult as I deem fit. The evidence of our own sensors and of the Martian and Earth feeds to which we have access all show that the Rocinante has passed through the ring in good condition and appears to have sustained no damage despite the physical anomalies on the other side. In light of that, I have made the decision to follow Holden through the ring and take him and his crew into custody. I will be sending out specific instructions to all department heads outlining what preparations we will need to complete before we begin our burn, but I expect to be in pursuit within the next 6 hours. It is imperative for the pride, dignity, and honor of the OPA that this insult not go unanswered, and that the hands that bring Holden to justice be ours. I want you to know that I am honored to serve with such a valiant crew, and that together we will make history. Take these next hours, all of you, to rest and prepare. God bless each and every one of you, and the Outer Planets Alliance."
With a resounding click from 100 speakers, Ashford dropped the connection. The flashing white light of the welding torches was gone, and the bay was darker. Laughter warred against despair in Bull's gut.
"Is he drunk, do you think?" Sam said.
"Worse. Embarrassed. He's trying to save face," Bull said.
"The behemoth filled its ditties in front of God and everyone, so now we're going to be the biggest badass in the system to make up for it?"
"Pretty much. Gonna talk him out of it? Gonna try."
Sam scratched her cheek.
"Could be hard to back down after that little once more into the breach thing."
"He won't," Bull said. "But I've got to try."
The inner planets came out to the black, with an understanding that they were soldiers sent to a foreign land. Bull remembered the feeling from when he'd first shipped out, the sense that his home was behind him. For the Inners, the expansion out into the solar system had always had the military at its core. The Belters didn't have that. They were the natives here. The forces that had brought their ancestors out to the Belt had roots in trade, commerce, and the overwhelming promise of freedom. The OPA had begun its life more like a labor union than a nation. The difference was subtle, but powerful, and it showed in strange ways. If they had been in any of the Earth or Mars ships that floated now in the darkness near the ring, Bull would have come from his thorough and profound dressing down by the captain to seek out Exo-Pa in a galley or mess hall. But this was the behemoth, so he found her in a bar. It was a small place with bulbs of alcohol, chocolate, coffee, and tea, all set with temperature controls in the nipple, so the uniformly tepid drinks could come out anywhere from almost boiling to just this side of ice. The decor was cheap nightclub, with colored lights and cheap graphic films to hide the walls. Half a dozen people floated on handholds or tethers, and Pa was one of them. His first thought as he pulled himself toward her was that she needed a haircut. With the false gravity of acceleration gone, her hair floated around her, too short to tie back, but still long enough to interfere with her vision and creep into her mouth. His second thought was that she looked as tired as he was. "Mr. Baca," Pa said.
"Exo, you mind if I join you?"
"I was expecting you. You've been to see the captain?" Bull wished he could sit down. Not for any actual reason, so much as the small physical punctuation it would have given their conversation.
"I have. He wasn't happy to see me. Showed me the proposal you'd built up on how to remove me from my position."
"It was a contingency plan," she said.
"Yeah. So, this idea where we take the behemoth through the ring? We can't do that. We start any kind of serious burn, we're going to have two navies on our butts. And we don't know what's on the other side, except that it's way more powerful than we are.
Do you want an alien civilization taking its ideas of humanity from Jim Holden?" Ashford had said the same thing, word for word. It had been his most cogent argument. And now, Bull knew where he'd borrowed it from. He'd had the long trip down in the lift to let his sleep-deprived brain come up with its counter-argument.
"That's not even going to come into play if they shoot our nuts off before we get there," he said. "You really think Earth and Mars are going to go for the whole we're just playing sheriff line? There's going to be a bunch of them who still think whatever Holden was up to, we were in on it. But even if they don't, the part where they stand to the side and let us take the lead isn't going to happen. You can bet your ass the head of the Mars Force is asking his exo if they want an alien civilization taking its ideas of humanity from Ashford."
"That was nice," Pa said. "The reversal thing? That was good."
"The inner planets may not be making threats yet," Bull said.
"But they are. Mars has threatened to open fire on us if we get within 100,000 kilometers of the ring." Bull put his hand to his mouth. He could feel his mind struggling to make sense of the words. The Martian Navy had already laid down an ultimatum. Ashford hadn't even mentioned it.
"So, what the hell are we doing?"
"We're preparing for burn in 4¾ hours, Mr. Baca," Pa said, "because that's what we've been ordered to do." The bitterness wasn't only in her voice. It was in her eyes and the angle of her mouth. Sympathy and outrage battled in Bull's mind, and underneath them, a rising panic. He was too tired to be having this conversation, too tired to be doing what he had to get done. It had stripped away all the protections that would have made him hesitate to speak. If he could have gotten just one good cycle's rest, maybe he could have found another way. But this was the hand he'd been dealt, so it was the hand he'd play.
"You don't agree with him," Bull said. "If it was your call, you wouldn't do it."
Pa took a long pull at her bulb, the flexible foil buckling under the suction. Bull was pretty sure she wasn't drinking for the taste, and the urge to get some whiskey for himself came on him like an unexpected blow. "It doesn't matter what I would do or wouldn't do," Pa said. "It's not my command, so it's not my decision."
"Unless something happens to the captain," Bull said. "Then it would be."
Pa went still. The sound of the music, the shifting patterns of lights, all of it seemed to recede. They were in their own small universe together. Pa thumbed on the bulb's magnet and stuck it to the wall beside her. "There are still hours before the burn starts, and then travel time. The situation may change, but I won't take part in mutiny," she said.
"Maybe you wouldn't have to. Doesn't have anything to do with you. But unless you're going to specifically order me not to..."
"I am specifically ordering you, Mr. Baca. I am ordering you not to take any action against the captain. I am ordering you to respect the chain of command. And if that means I have to commit to following through on Ashford's orders, then I'll make that commitment."
Do you understand me?
Yeah, Bull said slowly. Either we're all going to die, or we're going through the ring.
Chapter 18. Anna. 11 people showed up for Anna's first worship service. The contrast with her congregation on Europa was unsettling at first. On Europa, she'd have had 20 or so families straggling in over the half hour before the service began, and a few drifting in late. They'd have been all ages, from grandparents rolling in on personal mobility devices to screaming children and infants. Some would come in their Sunday best formal wear, others in ratty casual clothes. The buzz of conversation prior to the service would be in mixed Russian, English, and outer planets polyglot. By the end of the worship meeting, a few might be snoring in their pews. Her UNN congregation showed up in a single group at exactly 9:55 a.m. Instead of walking in and taking seats, they floated in as a loose clump, and then just hovered in a disconcerting cloud in front of her podium. They wore spotless dress uniforms so crisply pressed they looked sharp enough to cut skin. They didn't speak. They just stared at her expectantly. And they were all so young. The oldest couldn't have been more than 25. The unusual circumstances rendered her standard worship service inappropriate. No need for a children's message or church announcements. So Anna launched directly into a prayer, followed by a scripture reading and a short sermon. She'd considered doing a sermon on duty and sacrifice. It seemed appropriate in the martial setting. But she had instead decided to speak mostly on God's love. Given the fear Chris had expressed a few days prior, it felt like the better choice. When she'd finished, she closed with another prayer, then served communion. The gentle ritual seemed to ease the tension she felt in the room. Each of her 11 young soldiers came up to her makeshift table, took a bulb of grape juice and a wafer, and returned to their prior position floating nearby. She read the familiar words in Matthew and Luke, then spoke the blessing. They ate the bread and drank from the bulb. And, as had always happened since the very first church service she could remember, Anna felt something vast and quiet settle on her. She also felt the shiver that tried to crawl up her spine, competing with a threatening belly laugh. She had a sudden vision of Jesus, who'd asked his disciples to keep doing this in remembrance of him, watching her little congregation as they floated in microgravity and drank reconstituted grape beverage out of suction bulbs. It seemed to stretch the boundaries of what he'd meant by this. A final prayer, and the service was over. Not one of her congregation pushed toward the door to leave. 11 young faces stared at her, waiting. The oppressive aura of fear she'd managed to push away during the communion crept back into the room. Anna pulled herself around the podium and joined their loose cloud. "Should I expect anyone next week? You guys are making me nervous." Chris spoke first. "No, it was real nice." He seemed to want to say more, but stopped and looked down at his hands instead. "Back on Europa, people would have brought snacks and coffee for after the service," Anna said. "We could do that next time, if you want." A few half-hearted nods. A muscular young woman in a marine uniform pulled her hand terminal halfway out of her pocket to check the time. Anna felt herself losing them. They needed something else from her, but they weren't going to ask for it. And it definitely wasn't coffee and snacks. "I had a whole sermon on David," she said, keeping her tone casual, conversational, "on the burden we place on our soldiers, the sacrifices we ask you to make for the rest of us." Chris looked up from his hands. The young Marine put her hand terminal away. With her podium behind her,
The meeting room was just a featureless gray box. The little knot of soldiers floated in front of her, and suddenly the perspective shifted, and she was above them, falling toward them. She blinked rapidly to break up the scene and swallowed to get the lemony taste of nausea out of her throat. David, a young man with brown hair and dark skin, said. He had an accent that she thought might be Australian. King of Israel, another young man said. That's just the nice version, the Marine countered. He's the guy who killed one of his own men so he could sleep with his wife. He fought for his country and his faith, Anna cut in, using the teacher's voice she used in Bible classes for teenagers, the one that made sure everyone knew she was the voice of authority. That's the part I care about right now. Before he was a king, he was a soldier, often unappreciated by those he served. He put his body over and over again between danger and those he'd sworn to protect, even when his leaders were unworthy of him. A few more nods. No one looking at hand terminals. She felt herself getting them all back. And we've been asking that of our soldiers since the beginning of time, she continued. Everyone here gave up something to be here. Often we're unworthy of you, and you do it anyway. So why didn't you? Chris asked. You know, do the David sermon. Because I'm scared, Anna said, taking Chris's hand with her left and the hand of the Australian boy with her right. Without anyone saying anything, the loose cloud became a circle of held hands. I'm so afraid, and I don't want to talk about soldiers and sacrifice. I want to talk about God watching me, caring about what happens to me. And I thought maybe other people would too. More nods. Chris said, when the skinnies blew that ship, I thought we were all dead. No shit, the Marine said. She gave Anna an embarrassed look. Sorry, ma'am. It's okay. They say they didn't, another woman said. They shot at Holden. Yeah, and then their whole ship mysteriously turned off. If the dusters hadn't pinged Holden, he'd have flown off scot-free. They're gonna follow him, the young Marine said. Dusters say they'll smoke them if they go in. Fuck the dusters, the Australian said. We'll grease every one of them if they start anything. Okay, Anna cut in, keeping her voice gentle. Dusters are Martians. They prefer Martians. And calling people from the outer planet skinnies is also rude. Epithets like that are an attempt to dehumanize a group so that you won't feel as bad about killing them. The Marine snorted and looked away. And, Anna continued, fighting out here is the last thing we should be doing. Am I right? Yeah, Chris said. If we fight out here, we'll all die. No support, no reinforcements, nothing to hide behind. 3 armed fleets and nothing bigger than a stray hydrogen atom for cover. This is what we call the kill box. The silence stretched for a moment. Then the Australian sighed and said, Yeah. And something may come out of the ring. Saying the thing out loud and then acknowledging it drained the tension out of the air. With everyone floating in microgravity, no one could slump, but shoulders and foreheads relaxed. There were a few sad smiles. Even her angry young Marine ran a hand through her blonde crew cut and nodded without looking at anyone. Let's do this again next week, Anna said, while she still had them. We can celebrate communion, then maybe just chat for a while. And in the meantime, my door is always open. Please call me if you need to talk. The group began to break up, heading for the door. Anna kept hold of Chris's hand. Could you wait a moment? I need to ask you about something. Chris, the Marine said with a mocking sing-song voice, gonna get a little preacher action. That's not funny, Anna said, using the full weight of her teacher voice. The Marine had the grace to blush.
Sorry, ma'am. You may leave, Anna said, and her Marine did. Chris, do you remember the young